Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Yes, indeed. Friday get-together. Here we go again with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, hello. Good morning.
Worrisome.
Worrisome what?
The Yankees only half a game out of first now.
Yeah, but I was just talking to Len Berman a few moments ago. As he pointed out, it doesn't matter if you're first or second. Everybody goes to the playoffs.
Steinbrenner, if he were alive, would not say that. And I don't think his son would say it either. It does matter. Come on. I'm going to go to the game tonight because they can't lose if I go, I think. We're playing the Red Sox, and I want to prove I'm not a Red Sox fan, which my mother says I never went to a Red Sox game, so I don't remember ever gone. I was a Celtics fan.
I think you protest, maybe.
No, just to hear people say. Yeah, it comes back to the I've always been a Yankee fan. I'm very careful to say I went to a Mets game with my youngest two weeks ago, and tonight I'm actually going to go with a couple of other people, and George, my daughter, is going to be there with a bunch of her friends. Sometimes she'd prefer not to have daddy or friends. More interesting, but anyways, things are good. City is doing well. There's a story out, job creation. You know, everybody talks about jobs, and we do have too many people unemployed here. But New York City this year has created net 100% of the private sector jobs in New York State, and 10% of all the private sector jobs created in the United States this year. New York City alone.
And that proves what everybody says. It's not big government that does it. It is the businessman, the entrepreneur.
Well, it's a lot of people. It is the cultural things we do that, you know, people laugh. They said it's stupid to be able to swim in Park Avenue. That got press around the world. Stupid to have these statues on top of the buildings. I love that. Everybody's going to jump. People are going to rush to the police. They're going to spend all their time. I don't think they ever got a call. But those things bring tourism. Tourism's a big generator of jobs. The restaurant industry, the fashion industry, the media industry, Wall Street's doing better. But all the little things you do to make this city attractive, better schools, lower crime, cleaner streets, those kinds of things get people to move their companies here and start businesses here. The only thing we've got that would help more is a common sense immigration reform so that we could get more people from around the world coming here because they would come here, start businesses, and create more jobs for the people in this city who need them.
And how do we explain why that doesn't happen with Americans and not people from other places?
Oh, Americans do, but there are an awful lot of, you know,
it's a numbers game.
America has, let's say, 330 million people. There's 6.6 billion people in the world, so we've got, you know, a small percentage. It's 5% of the world's population. Now, a lot of people who would like to come here, and I'll give you a good example. We need 140,000 more doctors. We need 500,000 more nurses over the next few years that we are going to care for people, particularly you have a health care bill. Whether you like the health care bill or not, it's in many senses disingenuous because there aren't the doctors to take care of people.
Correct.
There aren't the nurses. And the only ways you're going to get that is to give people who come here for medical training green cards. We still are the land of the free, the home of the brave. We are the place that not everybody, but an awful lot of people want to come and live here. And you should be able to say, you don't let people decide whether they want to come and rush across a border illegally. We should be giving visas to people that we want, people that bring the skill sets that we need. If you go up to Vancouver, just north of Seattle, a lot of the high-tech companies from California have opened offices there. Why? Because the engineers from around the world that are inventing the next great technological thing can't get into the country, so they're doing it in Canada. Pharmaceutical industry will move to India, places around the world.
Now, it seems, now that you brought this up, it seems so relatively simple to me to have some governmental organization, analyze the needs of the United States and come up with those and do that.
There's plenty of people that have analyzed it. We know what to do. It's a question of having the political courage to do it. And if you see, and it's both sides of the aisle, and I would even argue both ends. And presidents talked about it. He gave a speech, went down and listened to him. You and I have had this conversation before. Congress, in the end, is the one that writes the laws. I'm a big believer that the executive is the most important person in government. President's job is to lead. But in the end, it's Congress that has to go along. And when you have Congress, and it's both sides of the aisle, they don't want to do anything, no matter how right or wrong, if the other side gets a benefit. In fact, they won't even do it if it's neutral. They want the other side to get hurt. And it comes through loud and clear. Both sides of the aisle, both houses. And so immigration reform, everybody said, oh, no, we're not going to let any immigrants in. And we're going to talk about the 11 million undocumented, down from 12 million. People are going back home.
Well, it started at 23 a few years ago.
I don't know if that was 23, but 12 is probably a better number. Whatever it is, it's a lot less than it was before. Why? Because undocumented come here to work. This is not a country to put your feet up. You listen to some of these people, they say, oh, they're just using our schools, using our hospitals, not paying any taxes, taking jobs away, feet up, lazy, and welfare. They don't get the welfare. They don't go to the kids typically aren't with them. Some families are, but a lot of them are young people, just come here to work. They don't use the hospitals because they're young. Their employers withhold, and there's no place to send a refund. Some I think the estimates are 75% of them do, in fact, pay taxes. And they typically take jobs that Americans will not pay, will not take. Not totally, but generally. But the ones that we really want are people from around the world who are business people, entrepreneurs, have money, will come here, start a business. People from around the world who have technical skills to fill in. People around the world I'll tell you a great story. Making a commercial, this is about 2 years ago, and a guy from Nigeria, so that we stopped between filming and I'm chit-chatting with him, what do you do? He works for, I think he said he works for the City Housing Authority, and his wife, she works in a store, and I probably don't make very much money. I said, you have kids? He said, yes, we have four. I said, oh, what ages? He said, well, my daughter's at Harvard Medical School. He had a son at Yale, he had a son at Swarthmore, and I forget the gender of the youngest one was somebody at Stuyvesant. And I said to him, you know, how do you afford this? Because no matter how much you get in, these kids get an aid, there's some money the family has to come up with. He said, oh, Mayor Bloomberg, you don't understand. My wife and I, we can each have two jobs. That's what America's all about, people who want to work harder. And the history of this country is people who came, took two jobs, worked 7 days a week. And my father worked virtually 7 days a week all his life. That was what people did. And today, oh, if I have to work more than 30 hours or 40 hours, it's an outrage. I should be able to work less. And that's not the real world.
Well, we've gotten away from a meritocracy. We've gotten away from the hard
work. Well, but, you know, I think we can,
listen, to a certain degree.
I'm the first person to say we should help those less fortunate, and I think New York has done a very good job of doing that. But we've got to have a tax base in order to do it. If you want to help people, the money's got to come from someplace. And if you keep raising taxes on a small group of people, they can leave New York. That's not good for us. So, you know, this business, let's rip the lungs out of a handful of very wealthy people, doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't work. The country can do it because you're not going to leave the country, but you certainly can leave the state. And businesses can leave, and even for the federal government, businesses can do business overseas rather than here.
Most of the football players live in Florida and Texas for income.
We never complain. We complain about business people making a lot of money. We never complain about football players.
Okay. Very good. Let me take my first break here, Mr. Mayor. 17. Here we go. 28-2 after 8 o'clock again. A couple of lines open. 800-321-0710. If you got a question later on from Mayor Michael Bloomberg. You came out in favor of Andrew Cuomo, an endorsement there, and Dan Donovan for Attorney General,
and Harry Wilson for Controller.
Okay. Last time around, you didn't endorse anybody. Why this time?
It's the same reason that you see this enormous protest vote against all incumbents. The country's in trouble, our state is in trouble, and you can't sit back. And I think that Cuomo will, he's a tough guy, which is what you want, but he's got the common sense to work with the legislature. And in this state, if you can't work with the legislature, you're not going to make any progress. It's just the democracy that we have. I think in the case of Wilson, he is very qualified. The current controller's a business friend, Tom DiNapoli, nice, very nice guy, but I just think I called him and told him I think it's time for a change in all of the top people. And in the case of the Attorney General, you need somebody who's going to focus on crime, not push their social agenda. That's for the governor to do. And it's very disruptive for a governor if an Attorney General is out there trying to undercut him and run for president behind him. Just can't do that. And that's not fair to Shannon. He may not be running for president, but he certainly pushes a social agenda. And that's not what that job is. If he wants to push a social agenda, he should run for governor. And who knows? Maybe I'd support him. But the Attorney General job, I think Dan Donovan is phenomenally qualified. He's done a great job on Staten Island, highest conviction rate. He has had some difficult political things that have come up on Staten Island, which is a smaller community. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's worked together, and so there's potential for conflict. And every time Dan Donovan has done the right thing and removed the conflict by turning it over to somebody else, I think he's a qualified guy.
Hi, both Andrew Cuomo and Carl Palladino are both calling for reform in Albany. Is reform in Albany a possibility, or is Albany just the way it is?
No, you can reform. You are not going to do it in a revolutionary way. At best, you can do it in an evolutionary way. You know, I like all these guys that say I'm going to cut X percentage. If you take a look at the federal government or the state government or even the city government, most of the monies are committed by law and the courts and the public to things that you just can't change. Why are we here? Well, people should have complained back when, for example, pension benefits. In New York City, when I came to office, pension costs were $1.5 billion a year. Today, they're $7.5 billion a year. $6 billion increase. Virtually all voted by Albany, and the city pays all. Now, every time Albany voted another pension benefits, I don't remember the public yelling and screaming. And now all of a sudden they've woken up to the cost. It's too late to do anything because our state constitution prevents even the legislature from rolling back a pension benefit once they give it.
And the amazing thing is that the legislature attempted to do it again this year, raise pensions for certain special
groups. Nobody made a...
The governor did come in and...
The governor deserves some credit. Absolutely. Everybody dumps on David, but he deserves some credit. That is fair. But it's, you know, by the time you have in the federal government, if you take out Medicare and Medicaid, you're down to a very small percentage of what we do. Those two programs alone will take more and more. And, you know, nobody's got the courage to walk up and say, no, we're not going to pay. You can't, you're too old, so we're not going to give you that test. You know, you should have a bigger copay. Or, you know, we have a system designed for a different world. We had a system when Social Security was, for another thing that's going to go bankrupt, when it was first put in, the assumption was nobody would virtually nobody would live till 65. That's exaggerated, but not by much, but not much beyond that. Today, life expectancy is in the mid-80s. And we're so proud in New York City, we've increased life expectancy by a year and 7 months over the last 8 years. Yeah, but that means the pension systems. And
maybe you should stop doing such a good job.
I don't think that's the right solution.
I didn't mean it seriously either.
But, you know, the reason I got involved this time was I just think that it is so out of hand. And everybody's to blame. You and me, we didn't make enough of a fuss. The people who voted for it, they didn't think about the long-term consequences. The ones I guess I would let off the hook, believe it or not, are the unions. The union's job is to ask for as much as they can get for their members. That's what a union's created for. The problem is the rest of us that give them what they want. We should be able to say, I'm sorry, we value you very much and we value your services, but this is all we can afford. And that's, so the fault to me is not the unions, it's the city and state and federal governments around this country that have caved every time rather than saying no.
Well, that's because the unions and special interests have, an intimidation factor that in the public in the private sector rather would put you in jail for extortion.
Well, but it's only because we let them do that. If you turned and said, I don't care what you do, I'm going to do what's right, and if I don't get reelected, so what? There are a lot worse things than not getting reelected.
Well, there's one of the issues.
Okay, but that's that. Then vote for somebody who will have the values that you want and not just look for keeping their job.
That's exactly
what In the end, it comes back to you and me. We look in the mirror. We're the ones that vote.
And that's what I think is on the line right here this year, this November.
Well, we'll see, because remember, history of third parties are that you always gravitate back to the two big ones.
The other two, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look in London, in the UK, with the Liberal Party, was going to get all the votes. They did help get Cameron in, but they lost five seats. So we all say that we're going to rush to the middle, but in the end, the party loyalty, for reasons I've never understood, given I don't think either party has a philosophy. They just tend to go wherever their voters are. And in all fairness, both party major parties have big tents, so you can find anything you want within either party. Party loyalty seems to, for a lot of people, is more important than whether the people are qualified. It's nonsensical, but that's what it is.
It is totally nonsensical. While we're talking about finances and layoffs, I talked with the governor yesterday. He said that he thought he was going to have to lay off state workers probably middle of November-ish. New York, I know you've got a hiring freeze in.
We have, we have $3-4 billion deficit. Nobody really, these are all estimates, so nobody really knows. I always try to use a higher number because that's the worst case, and that's what we've got to plan for. If we get surprised, I want us to be pleasantly surprised, not disappointingly surprised. And we've sent a letter to each of the agencies saying they've got to reduce their expenses for the rest of this fiscal year, which ends next July. So you've had July, August, and September. You still have nine.
How are they doing that generally?
We're going to come back. They're going to come back and tell us, and then I'll look at it and make a decision whether they can do it that way. But we have 9 months in this fiscal year left to go. And when we're January 1st with 6 months left to go, we can make some cuts this year. That reduces the amount we've got to save next year, and then you've got next year. Each agency, we've given a different target, some tiny ones. I've said, look, if you can save some money, fine. But if you've got a five-person agency and you're doing something that's useful, cutting one person doesn't make a lot of sense and doesn't save any appreciable amount of money. If you've got people who are bringing in revenue, we don't want to cut those. We'd probably add some. If you got another tax collector can bring in more revenue, that's good. On the spending side is where you want to cut. And most of the services the city provides are popular and valuable and make a difference, and that's the reason why job creation is going here. People around the world like what they see and they come here. But the bottom line is we just don't have the wherewithal to do everything, and it's going to be painful. And people say, oh yeah, I know you got to cut, but don't cut mine. Well, I'm sorry.
You have a time frame on any or all of this?
Oh yeah, we have to do it because the extent we can do it for this year, we reduce our expenses next year, and the law says we have to have an executive budget next June that balances the budget. And I've got to explain in January how we're going to balance the budget for that year. So that's why we're starting now. We're not waiting. And typically, governments wait around until they get slapped upside the head with a 2x4 and all of a sudden they wake up. We're not going to do that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, it's 8:31. Let me take the break here on the half. 21 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. What's going on with Vito Lopez? The story has been going now that the city has done some investigation of the Brooklyn Democratic, the head of the Democratic Party in Brooklyn, and his nonprofit over there. But all week long, it's been sort of here, there, and everywhere.
There is a nonprofit that he founded that he's no longer on the board of. It provides a lot of services. Our Department of Investigations investigated them after some complaints, found two people that they think might have committed criminal activity. One, unfortunately, is dead. can't prosecute. The other one's been referred to the district attorney. And the Department of Investigations told the organization, you should have a more independent board and an oversight. So we put in the monitor, and they're getting a bigger board with our... And nobody wants to close them down because they're the only organization providing the services the city needs in that area.
Money from the city, though.
Well, yeah, but they treat a lot of people.
No, I mean,
but we can't find anybody else out there that can do it, and they apparently do a pretty good job given what they're asked to do to help, whether it's provide housing or care or whatever the case may be. And Vita Lopez does not have any direct connection. It is true his girlfriend is a very nice woman, very smart, runs it, and whether or not her compensation is appropriate or not. But the Department of Investigations did not think that Vito Lopez did anything wrong, and we did not investigate him. And somebody tried to make a story yesterday because he said I should have called him when he got elected, or reelected a Democrat. I'm not a member of the Democratic Party, so I shouldn't be calling and congratulating. It's not my business. I mean, if he gets elected and wanted to get elected, that's great. I'm happy for him. Congratulations. But right now, we have a couple more contracts that are going to this organization because there's nobody else available to do the work that we not want. But we typically wait until the state approves, because the state has an investigatory agency and they have to sign off. And they're a couple days late in giving us the approval, and so we don't send the contracts until the money, whatever it is, until they approve it. Now whether Vito's got problems in other areas, I don't know. He's an assembly guy who's been around a long time. I will say that he is relentless in getting monies for affordable housing. He just, that's his big thing. And there's an awful lot of affordable housing that he has got the state and the city to build. Should they have been doing it? Yeah. I mean, that's what we have. We have the city has a program to build or rehab 165,000 units of affordable housing. Vito works very hard to make sure some of that's in the neighborhoods that he serves. I guess that's his job.
Nonprofits, and this is a little bit different than Pedro Espada's issue with the nonprofits.
Well, that was...
It's a different issue. But nonprofits and those politically connected, is there a systemic issue here?
Typically, the city always has used these nonprofits to provide a lot of services. Now, there are people that say the city should do it with city employees, but the cost would be very, very much higher, and we could not afford to do it. Faith-based organizations and other kinds of nonprofits get a lot of times city and state contracts. And is the oversight sufficient? Yeah, I mean, if you take a look at our Department for the Aging, we closed 40-odd senior centers this year because they didn't have very many people going to them, and it cost a lot to provide the service. And we say, we have other senior centers close by, you just go to those. And if you want, there are some things that don't make a lot of sense in city government or in state government as well. State has these jails upstate with 60 or 70 employees and two or three or four inmates. And we keep saying, and we have to pay for it because they're designed to incarcerate typically juveniles from New York City who get sentences of longer than a year, I think it was. And every time we want to say no, they say, nope, you got to pay for it. And they take the total amount of what it costs to run it, divided by the number of inmates, and send us the bill. And we have no say in this whatsoever. So, you want to get back to this. It's time for the public to say, I'm not going to take this anymore, and call their assembly person and call their senator and say, you stop this or I'm going to work for your opponent. And if you don't do that, then you're not going to fix it.
New York City cabbies, the paper's story this week. It's not a new story. We've known about it, overcharging, pushing the wrong button.
Right. The good news is that the technology lets us catch them. And TLC, this guy we brought in, David Gaskey, had been a city councilman, has just really knocked the cover off the ball. Done a great job going after everybody, working with Rose Gilhern and the Department of Investigations. They took the 60 worst out of 600 or whatever, and they've gotten arrested. And the bottom line is, you're not going to scam the public, or if you do, you run a risk of us catching you, and we're going to work harder to catch you, and you pay the penalty.
Technology should be able to ID the person that was overcharged, should it not? I
mean, no, we don't know.
By a credit
card. If they pay by a credit card, then you can, sure. If they did not pay by credit card.
There's no money going back to those that were spent.
I think just the cost of refunding, there's small amounts of money.
Individually,
but just the cost of doing that would be mind-boggling.
I was shocked at the number of cab rides per day in the city of New York.
I think the amount of money spent on cabs each day is greater than the amount on the subways. I haven't looked at the numbers in a long time, but it's essentially the same, maybe. But it's certainly not less.
I mean, it's over 500,000 rides a day.
I once said, this is mass transit. Somebody said, oh, you're out of touch. No, this is what people use for mass transit. They also use buses and subways, but the yellow cabs are a big part of it. And then in other neighborhoods outside of Manhattan, it's not the yellow cabs, it's the black cabs. And that's a whole other issue. We need mass transit in all parts of the city. The state is not doing it with the MTA by starving the MTA. And we're trying to set up small bus, private bus companies, as you know, to pick up the routes that the MTA can no longer afford to do. We're trying to work and see if we can't come up with a solution for cabs where you'd have good cab service outside of Manhattan, where most of the yellow cabs seem to want to stay because it's just the density makes it more attractive for them.
Those minibuses that you're using to replace some of the lines that have been shut down by the MTA, why didn't the MTA do this?
Well, in all fairness, I keep coming back and defending Jay Walter, who doesn't need defense. He's done a great job. But the bottom line is the MTA is a creature of the state, and they have restricted what the MTA can do all the time. For example, the MTA has different bus companies. You see on the side, I love this, on the side of a bus, it says New York City Bus. And you say, duh, why are they telling me that? I see it's a New York City Bus. No, that's the name of the bus company. And there are multiple bus companies. And each one has their own legal staff, own PR staff, own HR staff, their own maintenance. They don't deal separate garages and all that sort of thing. Why? You say common sense says you should combine it. Yeah, Jade's smart enough to do that. It's the state legislature that won't. Why? Because the unions and the people who run each of these want to keep, and they have a lot of influence in Albany, and you don't care. You don't call up and say, stop this. And if you did, if the assembly person or the senator that represents you got calls from enough people saying, I'm going to vote for your opponent and help and support your opponent unless you do something, they'd fix it. Democracy really does work. It's only if the public doesn't care. When the public gets the government they deserve is the old story.
And then they complain. I mean,
it's easier to complain than do something about it. Somebody I know who went on and on and on about government, I said, it was on election day. I said, who'd you vote for today? Oh, I didn't vote.
Well,
I said, okay, thank you.
Yeah, if you don't vote, you should just be quiet. Just stand over in the corner. Last time I talked with you, last Friday, FDNY hiring judge, you were the city was before the judge. What happened?
Yep.
What happened with the...
The judge, if I understand it, has not ordered us to hire based on race, which incidentally in Chicago, I think it's Chicago, where there is a court order to do that. What this judge said is we can't hire unless we use quotas. Now, he doesn't want to like the word quota, but every single one of his five alternatives that he presented us are fundamentally to use race in terms of hiring. I have said we will not do that. Now, if a court were to order you to do it, that's a different story.
Are you at a stalemate then when it comes to hiring?
Stalemate. We just cannot hire. And what we're going to do is work on designing a new test. Because the argument is the test is not fair, although I'm not sure I see it, but I'm not an expert. It'll take a year or so. I'm sure it'll be litigated when we come up with one. In the meantime, we are going to explore our alternatives. One is overtime, which we really can't afford. One is closing firehouses, which nobody wants to do. And alternative number three beats me. but we are not going to divide the city and use race as a criteria to vote. And what really is annoying is Nick Scapetta worked so hard when he was fire commissioner for 8 years, and we had lots of people who gave us free media and creative and distribution, people who went out to the schools. We've worked very hard to make this job more attractive to a larger group of people, and then let the tests show who's ever the best, the smartest. And you know, I've said, if my kids are in a burning building, I want the smartest person the city could have possibly found to come through that door, because you never know what you're going to see on the other side. And don't tell me, well, above a certain level, anybody can do the job. That may very well be, but I don't want to run the risk with my kids' lives, and you shouldn't want with yours.
All right, Mr. Mayor, as you can see by the screen in front of you, we've got a few folks that have a question for you. We will get to them. We will do it next. All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got some people on the telephone here at WOR that want to answer your question. We're going to start with Tim from Fishkill, New York. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Tim. Well, that's okay. One comment, then I'll make it quick, is that the mayor mentioned about the unions are there to get whatever they can for the members. That's not the only reason the unions are there. The unions are there to protect the members' rights, to protect the members' safety, and one
thing... That's all part of it. I don't disagree, Tim. I've never criticized the unions and their job. They're elected by, the leaders are elected by their members. I think people have a perfect right to organize, and they should be fighting for the best working conditions, the best pay, the best advancement, all of that stuff. That's what they're there for. When they start talking about other things, that's when I sort of, my eyes glaze over. That's not their job. If I were a member of that union and the union leader was saying, well, I'm really here to help society and fix this and fix that, no, that's not what you're hired for. You can do that as a private citizen, and you know, keep in mind, union members are typically taxpayers and voters as well, so they're on both sides of the equation. But I agree, Tim, I agree with you. I don't have a problem. The issue here is the employer is the public, and the public's got to decide how much they're willing to pay and what kind of services they demand in return for that compensation. And it should be a fair negotiation. You don't have good workforce unless you pay them well. You don't have a good workforce that's productive unless they're reasonably happy. I mean, everybody always wants to make more, but they have to have respect and recognition. And you know, I've been criticized for paying our workforce too much, but I've always believed a well-paid workforce is what gets better services. I also think that well-paid workforce should work very hard and be very flexible. And when the cities or the state or federal government's needs or a company's needs change, they should be willing to change because they're in it. And when you see some unions and some of the private sectors have gotten devastated, the companies couldn't survive because they were never flexible, or maybe the company wasn't well run. I don't know which. In the case of the municipal systems around this country, all of a sudden everybody's writing these stories. States and cities can't afford the pension benefits and this. Well, they can't. But where was everybody when they were built up? They should have, you know, worked together. And I know the unions always want more. That's their job. And the public doesn't want to pay taxes. But the public's got to understand, if you don't want to pay more taxes, then you've got to say no. And you've got to have your elected officials say no.
And you've got that opportunity coming up in November. Okay. Diana, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ear. Go.
Yes. Good morning, Mayor Serrano. I just want to say that I agree with you on a lot of issues, okay? And I really think you're doing a great job as a manager of the city, because with the economy, we're really not suffering as much as others. My question is this. It's regarding Cuomo, and I'll be honest, I think he's a career politician, and he did not do well working at HUD. A lot of what happened with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, he was the boss.
Diana, I apologize. What's the question?
Okay, the question is why did you cross your party lines? You're a conservative.
No, I'm not. I'm an independent. I'm not a member of any party.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, why do you think he would be a good governor?
Well, number one, you have to look and see, just because somebody's been a career politician doesn't make them a bad person. We strike out and say that people that have only been in government are bad. That's not true. They haven't had as experience in the private sector. That is true. On the other hand, they probably had more experience than the private sector person where I came from when it comes to experience in government. I think, like anything else, I won't agree with Andrew Cuomo on everything, but I've watched him, and I think he's tough enough and smart enough to do a good job, and the state needs a good functioning governor. We've had, too many governors recently in a very short period of time. We need some stability here, and I think Andrew Cuomo will provide that. He's not going to be perfect, and he's going to make mistakes. Sure, everybody does that, and I'll fight him, I'm sure, on a lot of things. But on balance, I think that Andrew Cuomo is the right person right now for the state, and I'm going to work for him and get elected. And then I'll fight with him after he's elected.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to be it. There you have the poster for Andrew Cuomo, and we will see you next Friday, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much. That's going to do it for us.